Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveyankara Vavahai Tejasvinavati Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare From engagement in material activities up to the awakening of spiritual activities is called the preliminary stage of God consciousness. So here is where we're seeing is that if we're understanding that the material world is for the purpose of becoming God conscious, that means any activity that is being done before one actually takes up spiritual life or becomes God conscious, that's preliminary activity. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise we'll say, oh, that's just material activity. No, but that's preliminary, because by doing that for long enough, after a while they start to get sick of it, and then they want to know if there's something else. Right? From this preliminary stage up to the Uttamadhikari stage, there are innumerable levels. The five qualities, Tama, Rajas Tama, Raja, Rajasattva, and Sattva, are generated from people's five gross propensities. Scholars have considered these five levels of propensities and qualities from bottom to top. Dutta Kostuba. Inquiring about the truth of the material world is called Shakta Dharma, because the predominating deity of the material world is Goddess Durga. All behavior and practice instructed in Shakta Dharma is helpful only in the preliminary stage. Such behavior and practice is meant to bring one closer to spiritual life, and materialistic people may be attracted by this only until they begin to acquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Shakta Dharma is the living entity's initial spiritual endeavor, and it is extremely essential for people of that level. Right? So it's an initial spiritual, because they only see material, therefore to try to inquire into that, see how it develops, what's going on in the material world, this then becomes their preliminary spiritual activity. Does that make sense? So in other words, anything that has the aspect of regulating, you know, directing, creating respective authority, something that the idea of elevating yourself in any way, then that's important. If you're not doing that, then that's basically just animal life. Right? Does this make sense? Yes.
Caste is like a pagan beliefs and religions.
Means there's something there they're trying to elevate and all that. It won't be as developed, let's say, as the Shakta, but at the same time as when you deal with it, the wide range of Shakta. In other words, there's this recommended form which will be given by the Vedic literatures. But then anything that's dealing with the material energy and trying to inquire into that. Right, inquiring about the truth about the material world is Shakta Dharma. So even your scientists, this, that, are Shakta Dharma. Your pagans, and generally they get into all the elements and this and that. So, yeah, it means it's all a preliminary stage, but it's not that we would consider that very dynamic. But for people on that level, that's the thing. So, but you can jump all that by chanting and associating with devotees. You change the consciousness, so you change what you need. So you don't require that anymore. Right? That's what he's meaning like this. Such behavior and practice meant to bring one closer to spiritual life. And materialistic people may be attracted by this only until they begin to inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Once they've done that, then there's no need for that lower level. In other words, they're inquiring about material energy. But now that they've inquired about what you're actually supposed to be inquiring about, there's no need to inquire about the lower stuff. Does that make sense? When the preliminary stage is further strengthened, one attains the next level. One then considers the energy of work and the superiority of heat over dull matter. Right? So, you know, that one works and, yeah. And he, because if heat is superior over dull matter, what do you do with heat? Cook.
Sacrifice cooking.
Cookify, but other things?
You can transform metal.
Yeah, it means, in other words, you use heat to transform the material energy. Mm-hmm. Right? So all these kinds of machineries, all these other things, everything is done by fire. You know what I'm saying? Gun works by fire. Car works by fire. Does that make sense? It all works by fire. Does that make sense? So that's that level. So in other words, all this thing where you're using heat over that, that's the next. And therefore, he accepts the sun god, who is the source of heat, as his worshipable deity. Okay? And then they all sit out on the beach. Okay? At that time, Surya Dharma is awakened. Later, when one considers even heat as dull matter, and animal consciousness as superior, then the third stage, Ganapatya Dharma, is attained. In the fourth growth stage, Lord Shiva is worshipped as the pure consciousness of the living entities. And Shaiva Dharma manifests, right? So in other words, Shiva, he's the pure consciousness of the living entities. So they see all living entities in connection with him. Right? Yes.
So then Ganapatya Dharma is between animal and human, is that what?
Means you're seeing, animal consciousness superior. But he hasn't really gotten to the stage of the living entity yet. So it's Ganapatya, because then you get into, you respect groups or worship groups or you function in groups. Because you're Surya, like you saw before, is, you know, mankind and just, you know, that broad range of life. It's not specific, you know. So it's not about the life itself. It's just about the superiority of work over dead matter. So you do your good work, your good job, you sacrifice, and then everything, you know, the world is benefited. Right? But it's not a group, a specific group. So then, more than that, then you start to see, you know, the individual, the group, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Here it's just the world. It's just, it's general. You know what I'm saying? So you're seeing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because the thing is one might think it would go the other way, that the Ganapatya, the group, and then you're seeing the whole. But the point is, the whole is impersonal. The group is more personal. Though it's still, you know, animal. That's why he says gross. Then you get the pure conscious living entities, and you start to notice living entities, the concept of consciousness and everything like that. And Shaiva, in the fifth stage, the consciousness of the living entity worships the supreme consciousness, and thus Vaishnava Dharma is manifest. Generally, there are five types of paramarthic dharmas, or spiritual duties, that have been known by different names in different countries at different times. One considers all the different dharmas that are current in India and abroad, one can see that they certainly fall within these five categories. Okay, the religious principles taught by Muhammad and Jesus Christ are similar to the religious principles taught by Vaishnava sects. Buddhism and Jainism are similar to Shaiva Dharma. This is a scientific consideration of truths regarding religious principles, right? In other words, the basis of what they're doing. Detail is so much, right? Because that's the idea within this Tattva Vivek, is that we're starting to figure out what it actually is, the principles that things are functioning on. Does that make sense? So you can see there's, they talk about, you know, there's a single God, and that you're supposed to worship him, there's supposed to be that devotion, that sacrifice to God. So he's saying this, that, you know, that it's similar, but it doesn't have the complete knowledge. Right? Jainism similar to Shaiva, Buddhism is similar to Shaiva Dharma, because you're seeing the pure consciousness of the living entity. So there's just that pure consciousness. You're not seeing anything beyond that. Does this make sense? See, because everything falls into these five levels of consciousness. Right? You're anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, vijnanamoy, anandamoy. Right? But how it means, what are you taking as the particular principle you're looking at, then it still falls into these five. Then you change that, and then again falls into those five. Because you're always going to have ignorance, passion, ignorance, passion, passion, goodness, goodness. All right, you're always from three modes. You get that five. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is that the connection between the impersonalist and Lord Shiva?
Yes, that's why impersonalist and the Lord Shiva. You know, and also you see in the Dharma Shastra, everything you have to start with Ganesh anyway. You can't do any Vedic puja without starting with Ganesh. Right? Does that make sense? So you get those things. As we mentioned there, the pranamoy, it's all about what you can do with fire. Right? I mean, it's the whole thing is, you know, the petrol. What is it? Why petrol? What's special about oil?
Fire.
You have the desert. You have a bunch of sand, and a bunch of, like, black, sticky, gooky oil comes out. Because you can make fire with it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the whole culture is based on the superiority of fire to matter. But when you see fire is also a material element, so it's just you're dealing with all the material elements, but then there's those needs for, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, defending your dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Right? Then you get into the dharma. So then you see that particular group, you're in that group, you work with that group. Right? Does that make sense? So the mentality moves up through that. But it doesn't mean that you don't have somebody working in that, but their nature is not something else also. You know, you be mentality of one thing situated in another, so you get mixers. But it's just showing that how to categorize so you know what to see in the things. Right? Yeah. Okay. Those who consider their own religious principles as real dharma and others' religious principles as irreligion or subreligion are unable to ascertain the truth due to being influenced by prejudice. Actually, religious principles followed by people in general are different only due to the different qualification of the practitioners, but the constitutional religious principles of all living entities are one. It is not proper for swan-like persons to reject the religious principles that people in general follow according to their situation. From Sri Krishna Samhita, page 7, and Bhagavad Dharma Vichara. Right, because Krishna Samhita is taking what's the mentality of the... how the Madhyam uses that mentality to preach. Right, because Krishna Samhita, the point being made there is most books are written for the neophyte or for the Uttama. Right, there's very little written specifically for the Madhyama from his point of view. Does that make sense?
Why is that not right?
Well, because the means that the neophyte means that's where you're starting from, and neophytes, they can appreciate Uttamas, but they don't notice Madhyamas. So if you wrote from the Madhyama platform, they wouldn't catch it like that. So that's your... because what you're seeing here is that here is inquiring about, okay... okay, in the fifth stage, the conscious living entity. Generally, there are five types of paramarthic dharmas, or spiritual duties, that have been known by different names in different countries. So he's looking at anything that is dealing with the living entity taking up this element of the consciousness and worship as a paramarthic duty. But the first four are preliminary, right? And the fifth one, now that's then now proper, right? And then you take the from there to the Uttamadhikari stage, and you have so many levels. So that means if you take from Anamoy up to the top level of Anandamoy, then you have a lot of levels. Alright? Because he's looking at the material world as meant for the upliftment of the jiva. The jivas are spiritual. So it's just a matter of where their consciousness is at the time, that's why they're doing that. So the problem's not that they're doing that. The problem is because that matches where their consciousness is now. The problem is they could be doing the fifth level because that's their nature. So if you present that and they take it, great. If they don't, then you leave them be because better they're being religious in their own way, you know, by whatever's the local local custom than not being religious at all. Does that make sense?
We had experience of preaching to some Christians, like newborn Christians, and they came for us, started taking the Bible, but sometimes they couldn't keep it, and then after some time they went back, and they were very serious in there.
Yeah, because the point is this, if they come in contact with the Vaishnav Siddhanta, it will improve whatever anything else you want to do. But the point is, the Vaishnav Siddhanta can give you love of God, so why not use it that way? But even if you use it another way, you'll get the benefit, because it is God's world, it's God's laws. Everything should be connected to Him. Does that make sense? So there's that balance, because otherwise then the thing, well, then it's okay, it doesn't matter what any... No, it doesn't matter, because if that's where they're situated. But the point is there is the highest reality. You know? Does that make sense? Like, the kid is in first grade, so the point is he's supposed to get his PhD, right? But the thing is you don't say that that's stupid. You should be doing your PhD, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But, because that's a material example, but the nature of the soul is that one can switch to that, because it's a consciousness. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you can teach the academic viewpoint to the first grader, right? But they don't do it, because then what's special about them is academics, right? So they don't teach you that until the MA level. That means, is that the postgraduate level? When you graduate, means now you've done the preliminaries. Now you can become an academic. In the Vedic system is you make them an academic from the very beginning. You teach them how to think. It's different. Does that make sense? So that's what we show them that. Now if they can grasp that and take that, if not, they'll apply that higher understanding to their level. Maybe, hopefully they'll move faster.
The funny thing about the academics, devotee whose PhD was saying that she was working very hard, until she came to the PhD level, and then they told her, actually, you don't know anything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but at least that was an honest one. Yeah. Most of them really think they do know. Because we don't know anything, actually, but we won't let the public know that.
Yeah, that's what she's saying.
That you have to defend the academy very much. You know, you can't let them know that we don't know. Yes.
Mahārāj, can you sort of like further specify how they teach this academic thing in West to adults, or what are the main points
of
this academical thinking? Because you said that they only give it to adults.
Means they teach you how to be supposedly non-subjective. You're supposed to be objective. But objective means according to how the academics at the present moment think. So whatever is their way of viewing the world, that's what you have to learn. So, you know, it's always changing. But, you know, but you call it objective. In other words, if it's what they think, it's objective. It's what anybody else thinks, it's subjective. You know, like that. So it's a little group. They worry about that little group.
You have to have faith, Maris?
Yeah, faith. All that sort of stuff. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, faith. Okay, text 13. Oh, Bhava Klesho Bhava Kesham Mate Shaukyam Iti Stitam Nirvana Shuka Samprapti Sharira Klesha Sadhanath. Some think existence is suffering, and happiness comes when existence stops. Because the material body brings so many sufferings, they think they will become happy by ceasing to exist. Right. What's the last one? Regardless of when or whom they would perform good material. Oh, okay, they're talking about the materialists. Okay. So, okay, then you have, so that's the positive, right? In other words, we've studied what is the idea on the positive side, right? Your positivism, your materialism. That means there's faith that the material energy will give me what I want so I can be happy. Now he's presenting the other side. something existence is suffering. So now that you're doing good work, not doing good work is going to be suffering. And happiness comes when existence stops. Because the material body brings so many sufferings, they think they will become happy by ceasing to exist. Right? But if you don't exist, how do you know you're happy? But whatever. It sounds good, right? In other words, don't think too much about it. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. As long as they find pleasure in material things, materialists will hunt for material pleasures, whether selfish or so-called unselfish. They will seek the dull pleasures of the material world. Material pleasures are in truth very pathetic and insignificant. They are not a good companion to spiritual things. Right? So, because the whole material is meant for spiritual things, so it's not a good companion. But those who are absorbed in it, then they start there. Among the materialists, they who are intelligent cannot find any satisfaction in material pleasures. Ignorant of spiritual existence, how can they search after eternal spiritual pleasures? They come to think the cessation, nirvana of their own existence is the only happiness. Right? Because they know material is not bringing happiness, but they don't know about spiritual life. So therefore they think something in between. To that happiness they run. They say, existence is suffering. Cessation of existence is happiness. Because this material body brings only suffering, let us strive for the happiness of ceasing, nirvana, to exist. At the time in India when the atheistic karma mimamsa of seeking material pleasures was very prominent, and when the Vedas, which are filled with spiritual truths, were considered the only true scriptures, and when, claiming that the Vedas teach the atheistic karma mimamsa philosophy, many materialistic Brahmins sought by performing yajnas to attain sensory pleasures in this life and apsaras and nectar in Indra's city in the next life. A certain person dissatisfied with material pleasures, a person named Satyasimha, was born in a Kshatriya family, decided one day that there was no escape from the suffering of the material body, and that true happiness rests in cessation, nirvana of existence, founded the philosophy of Buddhism. Even before that time, the same philosophy, this was Prabhupada mentions that Buddhism was actually something meant for the Kshatriyas. Right? That was kind of there. The Jainism was for Vaishyas, and Buddhism was for Kshatriyas. Okay. Even before that time, the same philosophy of Nirvana was preached, a fact for which is ample evidence. However, it was at the time of Satyasimha that this philosophy found many followers. From that time on, there were many preachers and followers of Buddhism. Satyasimha was not the only preacher of Buddhism. During his time, or a little before, a person named Jinnah, who was born in a Vaishya family, preached a philosophy much like Buddhism. His philosophy is called Jainism. Jainism remained within India, but Buddhism crossed the mountains, rivers, and oceans and entered China, Tatarstan, Thailand, Japan, Myanmar, Ceylon, and many other countries. Even today, this philosophy is followed in many countries. Buddhism has many branches. Still, the ideas of void, shunya, and of cessation of existence, nirvana, are seen in all the branches. Still, human beings cannot reject their natural belief in God. So in some branches of Buddhism, worship of God is also seen. Because some of them deal with the four, the original, the Adi Buddha, who's a four-handed form, blue form, like that. But not all the sects deal with that, not all the groups. Some do. Like I think in Japan, there's one group that does that. There's six different kinds there, but one is like that. And within the mainland, then you have the, yeah, I can't remember. You have Hinayana and Mahayana. Do you know one of those is more that way or that, or it's within
those? Yeah, Mahayana is the word Tibetan in Eastern. So.
And so they're into the Adi Buddha?
They're into like worship of a deity form. They have one who's blue and who reclines on a lotus flower, reclines on a serpent.
Yeah. I heard they don't talk about it much, but. Okay.
Then Buddhists
Buddhism went all over the place, but Jainism did not. Why is that?
No, it just stayed in India, basically even in the Western India. Because, as you mentioned, it was amongst the Vaishyas, so it just kind of stayed in their scene. Well, Kshatriyas, if they get into something, somehow or another, the rest of the world's got to do it. Otherwise, you're just not satisfied. Satyasimha, that was his name, as born in the Kshatriya family.
Nepal.
It doesn't necessarily say where he was born.
So Kisim was born in Nepal.
Nepal.
There's the next section that's going to describe the difference between.
Oh, okay. I once asked some questions of a Buddhist monk from Myanmar. Myanmar? How do you say that?
Oh, that's just a type of
Myanmar.
Myanmar. Myanmar. What happened to the A after the N? I guess that's just how they say it. Me.
No, that's a typo. It should be Mian.
Oh, the N is after the A.
Yeah.
So Myanmar. Myanmar. Who's Mar?
There are two brothers.
Yeah, Myanmar. Yeah. Myanmar, yeah, we good friends, yeah, okay. I once asked some questions of a Buddhist monk from Myanmar, a fellow who did not understand the true teachings of Buddhism. He answered my questions by saying, God is beginningless. He created the entire world, assuming the form of Buddha. He's descended to this world, and then, again, assuming his form as God, he returned to heaven. We act piously and follow the rules of religion, then we will go to his abode. From what he told me, I could see that this Buddhist monk from Myanmar did not know the true Buddhist philosophy. In the name of Buddhist philosophy, he simply repeated the common religious ideas that are part of human nature. Right? Means it's not a criticism as such. It means that the, how do you say? Because the point is that the true Buddhist thing, it doesn't have really much of a meaning and stuff. Philosophy based on tricks of logic cannot bring good to human society. Such tricky philosophy is cherished only in the hearts and books of professional philosophers. People in general who claim to follow these philosophies will tend to revert to the common religious ideas. They're part of human nature. The universal love preached by Kant. Okay. The Karma Mimamsa, an imaginary Apurva god preached by Jaimini, and the cessation, nirvana of existence preached by S. By S. Will. Means by S. Will. Mr. S. Will or something?
Swill.
Swill. Preached by Swill, okay. Preached by Satya Simha, will all gradually become transformed by the followers into the common religion that's part of human nature. That is inevitable. At this moment, it is happening. Right? In other words, the point that there's a supreme and there's something to attain in that relationship with him. So he's saying is that if they don't know their philosophy, then with time, it will just naturally transform into that. Because that's the actual human nature. Human nature is to worship God, to be in a natural relationship with God. So whatever it is, you'll start, you give it enough time, and it will just start to transform into that. A philosophy of cessation, nirvana of existence, a philosophy like the Buddhist and Jain philosophers, was also preached in Europe. This philosophy was known as pessimism. Buddhism and pessimism are not at all different. They are different in only one way. In Buddhism, the soul wanders from one birth to another, always suffering. By following the principles of Buddhism, the soul gradually attains nirvana, preliminary cessation of existence, and then parinirvana, final cessation of existence. In the philosophy of pessimism, the soul does not have birth after birth. Thus, the philosophy of cessation of existence is of two kinds. One, cessation of existence after one birth, and cessation of existence after many births. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, now we've looked at... Just, do I have this?
I'm getting it.
Why, I'm going to run out of pages here?
Yes, this is the last
one. Oh, wow.
No, it's 27.5.
27.5. 28, 25, 28, 3 quarters, 29. How many pages? No, it's only 30 pages. Really short.
Immediately after this
picture. So 27.5 goes after 27 and before 28?
You can get rid of your 28. Your 28 is...
My 28 is bogus. Spurious. But I keep my 27.
Yes, you can use your 27.
So I keep the 27, but I put 27 and a half. And then I go to 28. Okay, so everybody else is like that also? Or am I? Oh, okay.
I hope so.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so now materialism, basically we have two main categories so far we've studied. It means selfish and so-called non-selfish, right? And then when one gets frustrated with that, then you get the pessimism, right? Because the other is kind of like a positivism. But this is the pessimism, right? Positive that I can become happy in the world, and pessimistic I can't be happy in the world, right? And that's of two basic kinds. One that understands reincarnation, so the soul goes on and attains nirvana after many births, or one who they only see as far as there's only this body, and then after when this body is gone, then it's all over. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's just been brought out so far. Buddhism and Jainism belong to the second group. Both accept transmigration of the soul. According to Buddhism, after many births of practicing kindness and renunciation, one becomes first a bodhisattva and finally a Buddha. Okay. In this philosophy, by practicing humbleness, peacefulness, tolerance, kindness, selflessness, meditation, renunciation, and friendliness, right? All the things that they were telling you to do in the other. So in other words, you still have to do all these nice qualities. But you can use all these nice qualities and then try to apply it in the materialism, right? And then, you know, it gets, the materialism improves, right? From being self-centered, it improves. But still, it doesn't satisfy the need of the soul. So therefore, one still perceives suffering. Now, if you want to get rid of that, right, by the nirvana, then you still have to do the same thing. Just your goal is different. You understand? But still, there won't be satisfaction because the soul is an individual living entity. So then, basically, ultimately, you're left with the choice, these qualities being applied in devotional service. Right? But the difference is these are about getting what I want. So in other words, these good qualities become the prominent element of practice. Right? Because it's a means to get what you want. Well, in the devotional process, is pleasing the Lord is the prominent. And so these things are engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So they don't have to be sought after separately. Right? Does that make sense? And these other materialistic systems, then you have to seek them separately, because otherwise you're not going to have them. Does that make sense? Yes.
As we discussed previously, the division here is the polluted consciousness, right? Between
polluted consciousness, so karma and jnana. Basic polluted consciousness means karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. So karma is your self-centered or extended sense gratification, and your jnana is, you know, cessation of material existence. Like that. And basically there's one that accepts the soul goes on, and the other is just that it's just the body. Right? In other words, the Buddhism and Jainism will also say the consciousness is coming from matter, because it's only because you're an illusion that you think you are separate. Right? Because then you join. So therefore it is coming from matter, but the idea that that consciousness continues, even it's not connected with the body. You know, it's identifying with the body. But your grosser forms, then they think the body is the cause of life, cause of consciousness, everything. So when the body's finished, then it's all over. Right? Does that make sense? But the point thing that catches the principle of it, the common point, not the detail. Because detail, then there's, like it's saying in Buddhism, there's unlimited forms of the Buddhism. Right? So, but the principle is the same. They all believe in that aspect of nirvana. Right? Okay. In Pari Nirvana, the soul no longer exists. Right? So the first, the bodhisattva means exists, but now you're in a very good state. So those are the forms that preach. Because if you go to Pari Nirvana, you're not there, so how can you preach? Right? So therefore you're only being benefited by the bodhisattva, never by the Pari Nirvana. In Pari Nirvana, okay. In ordinary Nirvana, the soul continues to exist in a form of mercy. The followers of Jainism say, by practicing kindness and renunciation, and by cultivating all virtues, the soul gradually passes through the stages of Nardadattva, Mahadevattva, Vasudevattva, Paravasudevattva, Chakravartitva, and at the end, when he attains Nirvana, Bhagavatva.
Get the same terminology as the Vedas, right?
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, because they're from India, because that was the whole point of Buddhism is rejected the Veda. Jainism, it was coming from observing those following there, so they'll use similar. But even in Buddhism, much of the terminologies are not they use in examples. Like, you know, Buddhism is famous for the example of the six blind men and the elephant. But that's actually a Vedic example. So much of what they do. Otherwise, what are you going to do? Now you're a Buddhist, right? So technically, this is actual real Buddhist. He gets up in the morning, right? He does his meditation, you know, or discusses Buddhism with other guys living under a tree, right? He's living under a tree. Then at noontime, they go out and beg for a certain amount of time. Then that's what they eat, and then they spend the rest of the day in their meditation. That's all they do. They have no place. They just wander from one place to the next. That's real Buddhism. Right? Who do you know does that?
Sannyas.
Sannyas, but I'm saying within Buddhism.
Nobody.
Right? So therefore, since they're going to have a temple, they're going to have rituals, where are they going to get this stuff from? Right? So they're naturally just going to pull it from the Vedic. Right? Because you don't have all those different things. You don't have the Purusha, you don't have Prakriti and time, you know, out there. The Khmers didn't work it out. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. It happened here. So they just take everything from here. And then with time it takes on its own special uniqueness. And then more time, then it just again reverts back to the natural human religion.
Analyzing the Sermon of the Mount, is that the
Sermon of the Mount? I think that's Jesus. Yeah, yeah.
The sermon.
Also the fish one and the bread one, that's Jesus.
Buddha gave. It's basically a psychological, there's eight precepts which he gives.
Something. Basically, be good, be nice. Be really nice, be really good. I think the Sermon of the Rose is the most famous. So everyone was there, thousands of people, he held up a rose. And they're all looking at the rose, and he said nothing the whole time. That was probably the best one. So everyone's just speculating. What does he mean? What is he this, that, you know, so... He must have been having so much fun. They're just watching everyone. Wow, that was great. That was it. He's just thinking, I didn't do any. What do you mean that was great?
I heard one comedian. He said he was doing like a parody of Jesus, and Jesus was holding God's hand like this. And he's like, no, Dad, you know, I'm not going back. I'm not going back there. They totally missed the point, you know. Everyone's still walking around with crosses on their neck, you know, meaning that they miss the point, like, it's all about his, you know, crucifixion, and not that it was about pure devotional service, you know, so they miss the point, you know.
Okay,
he's making this
Yeah, yeah, that's always. Because it's always going to go to the external. That's the thing. It's always going to go to ritual, which is in karma, or, you know, whatever it is, and enjoyment there, or into, you know, pessimism, like that. It's always going to go to one of those. But at the same time, even though it goes into that, the underlying nature, that the soul has faith in God and that relationship with God, that will eventually at some point come out. You know? So those who bring it out more prominently, then that's closer to the actual Vaishnavism. Okay. The material world is to be eternal. Karma has no beginning, but it does have an end. Existence is suffering, and cessation of existence, pari nirvana, is happiness. Jaimini's Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which claims to accept the Veda's authority, is inauspicious for the living entities. Cessation of existence, parivana, is auspicious for the living entities. Although they are masters of the followers of Karma Mimamsa, Indra and the demigods are servants of the sages who seek nirvana. So is that all what he's saying is about what Jains say, or where is that coming from? Because it's not clear if it's a quote, who's talking here. Still the Jain philosophy.
Yeah.
Okay, so they were also going against Karma Mimamsa. Schopenhauer and Hartmann belong in the first group of philosophers who preach cessation of existence. Schopenhauer taught that by abandoning the will to live and by fasting, desirelessness, renunciation, humbleness, bodily mortification, purity, and renunciation, the soul attains nirvana. In Hartmann's philosophy, there's no need for bodily mortification. The moment of death, one automatically attains nirvana. Right, so you don't even have to bother at all. You just go on living life, and you'll attain nirvana when you die. Okay, that for most people, now that's what I can relate to that. Okay, a philosopher named Harry Benson taught that suffering is eternal and nirvana is an impossibility. Yeah, so he had a bad time then. I even think some of them, like the Mayans and some of those down, you know, in that Central America, their idea is that you're here now and then afterwards, then you just kind of go to a place and just suffer. That's what you do eternally afterwards. So it's not, you know, really something to look forward to. So. Here it may be said that the Advaita monism or impersonalism philosophy is only another kind of materialistic philosophy of cessation of existence. Right, so he's pointing it out is that even though it appears they say it's spiritual, it's actually just another materialistic form of, because it's not connected with the Lord. So it's either connected with the Lord, that's actually spiritual. If it's not, then it's actually material. All the impersonalists yearn to end their own individual existence and then taste the spiritual bliss of merging into impersonal Brahman. Right, so whether you're merging into Brahman, you just somehow or another, they get this idea that you stop the material existence and individuality, then you're going to be happy. You know, so that's the common point. That is their philosophy. However, after nirvana, they no longer exist. If they do not exist, then they cannot experience bliss or anything else. Actually, the philosophy is exactly like the materialistic philosophy of nirvana. The materialistic philosophy of the cessation of existence is completely untenable, for it has not decided on the nature of the individual person. If the individual persons are merely creations of matter, then one falls into the philosophy accepting only material pleasures as important. That is pure atheism. But if, on the other hand, the individual persons are different from matter, independent of the transformations of matter, then how will they cease to exist? Right? So in other words, if you're saying is they're only matter, then that means interacting. If you're only matter, then interacting with matter is the only logical. That's you're doing what you do best. right? But that's just pure atheism, because then you're saying life is from matter. Where's God? God is the source of life. God is the source of the energies. But you're saying, no, it's just matter itself, and it's complete in itself. Right? Yes?
Well, it says the impersonalists, they yearn to end their own individual existence and replace spiritual bliss by merging into the Brahman. So that would mean, like, if you can get closer to not having personal individual existence, then you become happier. So if you got on the crowded bus going to Calcutta, then you should feel,
more happiness as you're packed in with, and your particular individuality is being assaulted from all sides.
Yeah.
Right? And anything you call your own, somebody's taking out of your pocket and putting in theirs. Yeah. So yeah, you should be getting more happy by that. Yeah. That would do it. You know, or any social status you have, you're stripped of that. You're just one of the ordinary people. You know, like that. It's just everything. It's just, you know, like that. It's just nothing left. It's just, you're just one of the boys, you know. So merge into the, you know, just become part of the furniture or something. That's good. Then you go, then it would work.
At last.
Yeah, at last, yeah. I always wanted to be furniture. Yeah. But then you have to watch out for that pride that might come by which piece of furniture, and if you consider yourself superior, you know, if you're the chair and not the footstool, right? You know, like that or something. Okay. Is there any existence that non-material persons or spirit souls ever cease to exist? In the end, all these philosophies are complete atheism. Footnote 18. Since Buddha opposed the Vedic injunctions, Vedic Aryans call him an atheist. But the Mayavadi's propagation of atheism under the shelter of the Vedas is more dangerous than Buddhism, because an enemy in the guise of a friend is more dangerous than an enemy. Mm-hmm. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 6.168. It was to stop the wickedness of the karma mimamsa idea that the preachers of these nirvana philosophies preached their own ideas so fervently. Because of the Brahmins' oppressive ways and their embracing the karma mimamsa idea, the Kshatriyas and other castes became very disturbed and staged a philosophical revolt against the Brahmanas. For this reason, the Kshatriyas all accepted Buddhism and the Vaishyas all accepted Jainism. Footnote 19. The Puranas give one story about the origin of Buddhism and Jainism. The spiritual master of the demons, Sukracharya, was arranging to bring Amrita from heaven so the demons would become immortal. In the meantime, Brihaspati, spiritual master of the demigods, took the form of Sukracharya and went to the Asura Loka. The demons inquired, "Guru Maharaj, have you brought us Amrita?" He answered, "No, I met Lord Shiva, and he said it is not necessary. If you simply practice total ahimsa, you'll become so powerful that nobody can kill you. Lord Shiva sent two persons to teach this religion to you. The two persons were Vishnu's amsas, one the Buddha, other the Jain." I think it's Jinna is the name. The one is like that. And beware that the demigods will send an illusory form of myself to tell you this is all cheating and thus bewilder you. So the two amsas started their preaching. They stopped the sacrifices of the demons and got them to practice ahimsa. Meanwhile, the real Sukracharya returned, but was challenged by the guards, who refused to believe that he was genuine. Finally, he found out that the demons believed him to have already returned, and there were two renunciates teaching ahimsa. He warned the demons, "Now you are finished. I am the real Sukracharya, and if you call the Asura Raj, I can prove it. That other is an impostor. By following the ahimsa religion, you'll lose all strength. The demigods will surely attack you in the near future, seeing your weak condition." Though the demons finally believed him, by this time many of them were already staunch converts to the new religion. Does it go on, or that's it? Yeah, it was mentioned here is they stopped the yagyas in that, because what had happened before is Sukracharya. The demons were wondering why the demigods are powerful. And he said because they do yajna, they study that, you know, they study, and then they, I think they do,
follow guru.
Yeah, follow guru or do charitable works or things like that, you know, good works. So then they became very powerful. So then the demigods got very worried. They went to Vishnu, and from Vishnu came these two Amsas. Right? And the fun part is he said, before this, is anybody wants to come back to me? Right? But nobody wanted to go. Right? So, because it kind of is, you know, as in the material world, the cure is worse than the medicine's worse than the disease, right? The cure is worse than the disease. So therefore, to get rid of the demons, following all these nice Vedic things is to get them to stop following him by preaching atheism. It's like that. And so then they started preaching like that. So then Buddhism, why do you have to follow the Vedas? So therefore they stopped the yajnas and all that. And for the philosophers, the jinnas, that maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Maybe you're right, maybe you're not. You know, so that they became bewildered. And that way it all stopped. Right. Hmm.
This ahimsa is the same of what Mahatma Gandhi preached.
Ahimsa just means non-violence. But in general, ahimsa means you don't get involved in anything. So the thing is, he's using ahimsa as his political tool. Like that. So it's just a strategy. It may be a belief like this, but the point is how, you know, where is the ahimsa? Your ahimsa, okay, you're not fighting back, but they're still marching in huge numbers. So you're still showing power, but not in a violent way. You know, and they still eat the animals, so I mean, it's not like they're really non-violent. You know what I'm saying? So that's a political application. But actual ahimsa means you don't get political. You just, you know, don't get involved materially.
So, why in the Vedanta Sutra, yes, they mentioned about Buddhism. Yeah. So how could be? I mean, Buddha is after Vyasa there.
No, because you didn't hear the story about this one origin of Buddhism and Jainism. They've always been there. But it's just now and again somebody preaches it. But this goes way back. This comes up when the demigods and the demons are fighting. So Buddhism and Jainism is used to defeat the demons to make them weak. Does that make sense?
So that means Buddhism exists.
It always just like materialism exists. It's just one of the kinds of material consciousness you can have. It's one of the options. So at different times and different circumstances, the different kinds of consciousness are more prominently manifest. Does that make sense? Yes?
Yeah. But it's difficult to convince outside people.
No, but that's another thing. That's what you think about and figure out how to do. But it's always been there. You know, better just to get them to take Bashad, you know. Okay. Okay. When people divided into factions and hate each other in terms of those factional groupings, that hatred can become very strong. Passionately loyal to their faction, people no longer give any thought to what ideas are logical or illogical. You know, it's nothing to do, it's just your group. Right? That is how Buddhism and Jainism were spread in India. They were also spread to other countries. Weak in spiritual reasoning, the people of those countries accepted these philosophies as sent by God. In Europe, some people who hated Christianity also preached the philosophy of Nirvana. That is revealed in history. So it's always there.
In the 60s, it happened a lot. When the young American culture was kind of revolting against it.
Yeah.
It took out a lot of the Eastern.
Yeah, so it's always that these things come up. Because they're always there. Because the point is either materialism will make you happy or it won't. You know, these are your two options. Because what do you have? You have the material world. What do you do in the material world? Materialism. So you can either say, yes, materialism make me happy, or you can say, no, materialism doesn't make me happy. You understand? There isn't another option. So within each of those, then you have so many divisions. So those that won't make you happy, then Buddhism is one form, Jainism is one form. You have these other wallas there, you know, S-will, you know, like that. There's so many other philosophers, you know. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. Vritti, confusion surrounding the identities of multiple Bodhas and Buddhas and multiplicity of philosophies preached under his name is clarified by Srila Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, our Srila Prabhupada Sannyas Guru, in his book Vaishnava Vijay. It's specifically just about Buddhism, isn't it? Or it's about
all
more? All Mayavad.
Yeah, but it includes Saddarshan to Mayavad Buddhism.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Vishnu's incarnation of Buddha appeared at Gaya. In the Bihar region of India as the son of Anjana. On the other hand, it is a historical fact that Satyasimha Buddha was born at Kapilavastu in Nepal as the son of Maya Devi. So it is clear that the two are not one and the same, although Satyasimha is today revered in this world as the Buddha, he factually has no relationship in any way regarding Vishnu Tattva or any connection with any incarnations of Lord Vishnu. Now, what must be seriously considered is what relationship does the Vishnu incarnation of Buddha have with Shankaracharya? Since Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy is totally rooted to Buddhism, we must determine with a clear methodology the nature of the two. The opinion when Shankaracharya disseminated about Buddha cannot be accepted as being correct and justified. Shankaracharya presented the idea that Vishnu avatars Buddha and Satyasimha Buddha were one and the same, which is completely false. And thus, this was the beginning of the illusory mechanisms of Mayavadism. A revered Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, revealed that Satyasimha Buddha was merely a vastly learned person who had attained some inner realizations. So when Shankaracharya placed Satyasimha on the high absolute platform of incarnation, when he displays undue reverence for him, although, as we have demonstrated earlier, he also spoke of the same Satyasimha as being in delirium, bleating in insanity. But not in France, right? These contradictions, one of reverence and one of feigned and pretended anger, were used to misguide the people in the artificial web of illusory Mayavadism expanded. The only reason why Satyasimha Buddha was also called Gotama was because he was a disciple of Gotama Muni of atheistic Kapila Muni's dynasty. This is so that means the Shankya philosophy. This is confirmed in the following shloka from the Sundarananda Charit. O Kausta, because his teacher was Gotama, they became known from his family line. As this was also one name of Vishnu avatars, Buddha, it helped to further increase the illusion that Satyasimha Buddha was one and the same as Vishnu avatars, Buddha. Many Buddhist scriptures give evidence of three different platforms of Buddhas, as described below. 1. Adi Buddha, the original omnipotent Vishnu avatars, incarnation of Lord Buddha. 2. Bodhisattva Buddha, the Buddhas like Samantabhadra, who were born enlightened. And 3. Human Buddhas, Buddhas like Satyasimha, who attained enlightenment in their lifetime. Lord Vishnu incarnated as Adi Buddha, the son of Anjana at Gaya in Bihar, India. He did not incarnate as Satyasimha Buddha, the son of Maya Devi in Kapilavastu, Nepal. So according to Srimad Bhagavatam Shastric verification, this is a historical truth in the actual Tattva. So from Vaishnava Vijaya.
In our school, Maharaj, we heard this story that Buddha, he born as a Siddhartha in Kapilavastu, then he got enlightenment in Bihar.
Say that again.
Yeah, Buddha as a Siddhartha.
So Siddhartha is Satyasimha?
he took birth in Kapila Vastu, Nepal, and he got enlightenment in Bodh Gaya.
Yes.
So this story generally meets the story of Nepal.
Yes, no, I mean sitting under the tree where...
Yeah, he made a holy pilgrimage to the place where Adi Buddha incarnated.
Right. Yes. So Satya, what would you call it?
Satya
Sima. But what's the Siddhartha, the same person?
Yeah, then,
Siddhartha Gautama.
Oh, I see, okay, because he was disciple of Gautama.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe he was initiated as Siddhartha. Okay. Text 14. Kechit varanti maya vaya sakartri jagatam kila chirachit savani sukshma shakti rupa sanatani. Some say maya's illusion is a subtle external inner potency, the mother of spirit and matter, and the creator of the worlds. Right? So now we're getting other aspects of means that can be used either way. Right, as we can see, is that you can be on the world is useless, so you want to end it, but you're being good and nice, like the materialist. Like that. Does that make sense? Or the materialist may not even care for the world in this way, then he just does what he wants. So you get these different things. So here the element of Maya's illusion is that this will bring out the element of the shaktas, one kind of the karma materialist. But you can also, sometimes you have them, they use it on the other side in the nirvan aspect. But generally that's Shiva they use on the nirvan side, and Maya on the how you say? Sakam side, right?
Just about Buddhism still. The last appearance of Buddha 3,000 years ago. No?
I'm not sure what it says, yeah. The Vishnu.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't include that, but the original Adi Buddha appeared about 3,000 years before the historical Buddha. The one that you're referring to, Satyasena, appeared in 500 BC. The Adi Buddha Vishnu avatar appeared thousands of years before that. Yeah. And it's just one note, sorry, I don't think I'm reading, but the original Buddha, he just teached Ahimsa. That was his only teaching. He didn't talk about God at all. Sakyasimha Buddha, he's the one who established Shunyavad and Anatta, the no soul doctrine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they just take something and then they don't understand it, so they take it further into something basically useless. Because the point is, the first one is to stop these karma mimamsas from killing the animals.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. But then you get the other element, and then they add all this other stuff. So he's just trying to get them to become peaceful. That's okay. So some say Maya's illusion is a subtle external potency, eternal potency, the mother of spirit and matter, and the creator of the worlds. Commentator by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Some say the beginningless potency named Maya created all the worlds. This Maya exists in a subtle form. She gave birth to the two principles, spirit and matter. When the dry philosophy of Buddhism became prominent, this philosophy of Maya persevered, although it mutated into newer and newer forms. Then Buddhism gradually became influenced by the Tantra Shastras. Right? Because Buddhism only means the element of just ahimsa. It didn't last in that form. Because they took on others, so they became impressed. Even so the historical one where he goes around preaching in India, that's your Satyasimha. Yeah. So they're going around, and so they're preaching their form of Buddhism. But when they got to Assam, they were seriously impressed by the tantric abilities of the Brahmins there. You know, like that. So then at that time, the Tantra became introduced into the Buddhist methodology.
So Maharaj, the King Ashoka, he accepted the Satyasimha.
Yeah, because he's later. Because that's the kind of Buddhism that got spread all over. Yeah. At that time, the Mayavad philosophy was created. It was then the name Buddhism became attached to the tantric philosophy. Among the people who had not accepted Buddhism, the Mayavad philosophy, a philosophy that was actually Buddhism in disguise, was preached. Okay, so who hadn't accepted Buddhism, then the Mayavad philosophy is preached, because it's actually Buddhism. Mm-hmm. When that philosophy based on the Vedas was preached, the activities of the Mayavadi Vedanta philosophers began. In the mountainous part of India, this philosophy was preached in a different form, in a form following the Tantras, preached by the Tantra Acharyas, who described the philosophy of Maya Shakti. Many people say the Tantra philosophy comes from Sudha Kapila's philosophy. I do not agree with that view. Although Sudha Kapila agreed that material nature, Prakriti, is the creator of the world, he also affirmed that the spiritual truth is beginningless. He said of the Purusha, Pushkara, Palasha, Van, Nirlepa. As a lotus petal is untouched by water, so the Supreme Spirit is untouched by the material world. In my view, it is the Shaiva philosophy that has come from Sudha Kapila's Shankhya. However, because in the Shaiva philosophy, material nature, Prakriti, is especially honored, undiscriminating persons often mistakenly think that Shaiva and Tantra philosophies are the same. Although in the Tantric philosophy, the Purusha, the Supreme Spirit, and Prakriti, material nature, are often compared to the two halves of a chickpea. In the end, the Tantric thinkers say Prakriti is the mother who has created spirit itself. Right, so you're saying that the material energy is there, but Prakriti is the mother of that, and spirit. Rather than there's matter and spirit as two parts of the whole thing, that she actually creates the whole thing. The Tantric thinkers also imagine a kind of nirvana, where the individual soul ceased to exist. That's why it says it's more in line with the... Okay, no. Belief in God is not seen in the philosophy that worships the marginal potency. The worshippers of the Lord's spiritual potency offer prayers to the all-knowing Supreme Lord. Imitating and mocking these prayers, the worshippers of matter sometimes also offer prayers to the material potency. The staunch atheist von Holbach offer these prayers to the material energy. Okay, this is his prayer. O nature, O goddess of all elements, O piety and truth, who are nature's two children, please be our protectors. May the human race sing your glories. O goddess of nature, please set us on the path of your happiness. Drive illusions far from our minds. Cast wickedness from our hearts. Keep us from falling as we walk the path of progress. Make for us a kingdom of true knowledge. Grant goodness to us. Make peace in our hearts. You know, so the interesting thing is here, on the path of happiness, walking the path of progress. You know, so there's all these underlying elements of the human nature you can see coming out. Of that supreme, that there's a higher destination, there's a higher thing to get for. But at the same time, then their conditioning comes out. We see here is the nature philosopher von Holbach also says there's no soul, no God, and no afterlife. He says everyone should seek his own happiness. He says material nature is the supreme controller. In the Mahanirvana Tantra, Lord Shiva offers these prayers to the original potency, goddess Kali. Okay, we've ended here. Oh, there's a whole bunch of them. Okay. So on Monday we'll hear Lord Shiva's prayers to the material energy potency. Okay. You know, for him it's just prayers to his wife. Right? That's not a big deal. He's just, you know, praising his wife. You know? You look so nice. You look, you know, so it's the same thing.
Technique to get good dinner.
Huh? Yeah. No, it's just, but he's good at it, so it works. So. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.